It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, we're not afraid, but we are relatively concerned. Here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock from Phoenix, Arizona, here in the BEA beautiful studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com. Now, let's go ahead and we have enough evidence as time has gone on, and we could spend hours and hours following it from the beginning to end of all of the four lawsuits and how you've prevailed and how it's been portrayed in the media and so on. But the end result is we got an overwhelming confidence in the system. I mean, let's ask John first. I don't know. Why? How is it that you can go to a young, energetic voter, 20 years old, and say you need to go to the polls and register your opinion on the government computers because what? Why?
Well, because we can't give up hope. We have to go ahead and vote hard. We have to go ahead and be aware. And as you've always said, it's about educating people. And I'm afraid sometimes I think that you and me are both on the same page, except sometimes I look at things as half full, and I guess maybe you look at it half empty.
No, I'm picking up another. I'm picking up another glass that doesn't have a hole in it.
Well, possibly. But you know, I have to live in hope, and hope is fighting them. And I know that with persistency and more persistency, and not being a conspiracy theorist, but being a conspiracy factualist, I deal in facts.
Jim,
let me
ask Jim, what I don't know, how are you approaching someone when they, because you know this has to come up. Well, heck, I don't even feel like voting. Sure. You go, what do you say?
Well, there's two things. First, if people think that a civil right is being taken away from them, they're actually more likely to exercise that civil right. And this is most definitely a civil rights struggle. Trying to convince the courts that there's a civil rights struggle going on in elections has been very difficult. And that's really the next place we've got to take this. I think the easiest thing that the courts will be able to wrap their heads around is that there is already a listed civil right to observe elections. And if the election process is not observable because of the use or misuse of machinery, then that's an unconstitutional process. And that's an argument that I think we actually can make. Now, we tried to make that argument to this one judge in Pima County, and he basically said, no, there is simply nothing the courts can do in regards to bad election processes. We cannot tell them to do it better.
So
that's what we're now appealing, is that basic concept that the courts cannot take control over a bad election process. That was what our injunctive relief lawsuit in Pima County was all about, and we've got the same concept coming up, we hope, elsewhere. Let me just say it that way.
I appreciate you guys doing this. I was always supportive from the beginning. I've driven down to Tucson several times. We've gone down there. We've held up signs. We've made it because I understood. I've run for Secretary of State using this issue, been real butthead about this. And because I had a different goal than you, I was not trying to reestablish some kind of legitimacy of the government by having an accurate election as much as I'm trying to show the illegitimacy of them on so many other levels, including the fact that you can't trust them in elections. So I kind of transcend. I've gone past this. I've done this, you know, for over two decades, and I realized that government in and of itself is its own entity. They keep they indoctrinate us with this concept of by, for, and of the people. What a bunch of hooey. That has been, it's been so far from that for so long, and this is just an example of it. And I go even a step further in saying, let's assume that the elections were completely accurate. I have absolutely no desire whatsoever to turn over to the majority my rights, to have done away with any way they want. Well, then you count on a judicial system and say, oh, that'd be unconstitutional. You can't do that. Well, the judiciary is the government. They're paid for by the government. They're put in place to protect the government. And I can't believe that you have gone through so many years, so many motions, so many lawsuits, and you don't see that the entire judiciary is not there to defend the rights of the individual. They are in place. They are selected specifically to protect the, I don't know, the control that they have of the government. And I'm going,
I wouldn't disagree with that. But what we're doing is we're raising the price. We may not win, but we're exposing. It's about waking people up, and that's what we do and what you do, okay? And I think that's very important. I think in the movie Fatally Flawed, I think Bill nailed it real well. He says sometimes all we can do is raise the price, and that's what you do, Ernie, don't you?
Yeah, no, I understand. You make them pay. You know, you give them pain because they can only understand. This is what happens. You're dealing with politicians. You're in an election year now. You got incumbents. You have bureaucracies. You have, you know, bureaucrats. You have judges, individuals. And all they understand is two things, pleasure and pain. And you cannot outdo the pleasure that special interest in the voting industry and all of the interest that they serve. Because if you can be in charge of the governmental mechanism to spend billions, you know, millions and then billions and then trillions of dollars, what's it worth to be able to control an election that gets one of only 100 senators for this entire country? 100. 100 senators have an enormous impact. In fact, all you need is 51 senators in a country of 300 million people to determine many things. Treaties, judges, Supreme Court appointments. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. So, heck, it's even, you know, not voting for something that comes out of the House. You know, so the incentive for this kind of fraud is so enormous. It's incalculable. So I'm going, all right, I'm wondering, how do we compete against such interests? What is it that we have?
Ernie, I think that's actually the wrong question. Here's how I see it, okay? I think that it is possible that we're actually going to hit a second American revolution, okay? We could actually hit that point. And the circumstances that would create that have to be a combination of two things. A major financial collapse, people realize that the socialistic welfare state is simply not a workable, sustainable model. Okay? So that's the first thing. The second thing, though, no matter what kind of form this revolution takes, it's not going to happen successfully or certainly not with as least possible violence unless the majority of the people understand that the current government structure has to be massively reformed top to bottom and from the bottom up. Now, that kind of realization on the part of the people is not going to happen until we have judges willing to say that, yes, there's corruption in government and we are not going to do anything about it. And when we have judges saying that, like we've had it said in Pima County and like they're saying elsewhere, when we force that kind of admission out of the court system, we're actually making a significant advance in doing so.
No, I'm with you on that one, but I've already had that. How many times have they got to say that?
Well, as many times as it takes before most people get it. The majority of the American public has got to get it.
They already have. I mean, you look at, I give you an example, and this is for the audience. I use this when I run for elected office a lot. Certainly, yeah, because I've been focused. I've run for Secretary of State twice, 94, 06. Wow. Ran for county recorder, which is the county version of, you know, in charge of the elections. And I've run for U.S. Senate and Congress and all that kind. But I always bring this up. Imagine you got 100 people live in Arizona. Only about 70% of them or so are even eligible to register to vote. You know, they're too young. You know, they're felons, which it keeps increasing. You have all kinds of problems. Then you have half of them actually register. So now you're down to like 35 people that actually registered. Just half of them actually go vote. So now you're at like, what, 16 or something? Then you got just half of them that determine, you know, the election. But you're down anywhere from, you know, 5, 7% to 15% of the people that determine everything. And I'm going, that's quit marketing to them. Market to the whole country, everybody. That's what I do.
There are those that just want to be left alone. And those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. I'm me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, with Jim March and John Brakey from Tucson, that we've been following each other's exploits and dealing with the corrupt election process from different perspectives, different motivations, different, but the same thing. You know, kind of, can we, if you're going to do this, if you're going to justify the wars and the expenditures and the entitlements and the money and the taking and the stealing and the IRS and all the Federal Reserve and everything right there, you better do it with a accurate election or what? You know, what's the point? And I've always, a lot of people mistake my use of the electoral process as support of it. And it's always been that is when people are paying attention. And that for 3 months out of the year, you can always get them to, okay, all right, I'm setting down my beer. I'm going to go over here and I'll click a web page and, you know, stop, you know, surfing gaming or porn or whatever the heck I'm doing on the internet. And I'll go ahead and take a look at whoever came out of the primary and who's left. And I get the vote and I'll get these calls. A lot of people will send emails or calls. They'll say, all right, Ernie, well, who should I vote for? What should I do? Where's the, and we'll create a web page that kind of, all right, this is what all the initiatives are on the ballot. This is what they really, 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 really do. And this is our opinion on whatever. But the thing is that I keep going back to, I just know better. If I know that it is not going to be an accurate, if I know they're going to, it's Ron Paul, is a Republican primary. Oh, they're having a big woo-hoo and a bunch of libertarians go and a bunch of young people go and register to vote. And a bunch of, they flood in and they go, oh, I got the voter registration card in the mail, but I'm not on the list. I can't vote. Oh, I got to do this provisional ballot thing. Oh, are you going to count that? How are you going to count that? When are you going to? And then they start questioning. They go through. After a while, how many election processes do they have to go through before they start to understand there's a problem? And I'm wondering what the end game for John and Jim is. I mean, you're highlighting these problems, and like Jim started to say, you know, maybe, you know, this is information we need to know. You have to be convinced that your expression is being thwarted, and you may have to express yourself another way. What way might that be?
Hand-counted paper ballots. Also, one of the things that we tried to do was to introduce a system of graphic scanning. We thought we were going to get it in Pima County, but once again, Goddard blocked it, and the new Secretary of State did too at the last minute.
If I could add to that, the single biggest legislative change in Arizona, there's really two, I think. One is that candidates or political parties should be able to challenge a particular election and ask for a hand count at their expense in any race that looks funky. That kind of law is practiced elsewhere, but here you only get a recount if the election is nail-biter close, one-tenth of 1% margin of error. I'm sorry, margin of victory. So it's very rare you get a recount at all, and when you do get a recount, it's, hey, run it through the machines again. Fat lot of good that does you. So that's one change in law, but the even bigger change in law is a switch to where we go ahead and use the junk, you know, black box voting systems that they've spent all these millions of dollars on so far. Go ahead and use them. But then take the paper ballots, which fortunately Arizona uses paper ballots, at the polling place and the mail-in vote, and we run these through normal scanners that just take a picture of each ballot, save them to CDs or DVDs or whatever, and we just hand those out to anybody who wants them. So any election that looks screwball, we can refer back to the actual graphic images of the ballots, and we can do our own hand count in any election that looks funky. That will make it extremely difficult to mess with an election without getting caught. It's the without getting caught thing that's most important. See, election fraud in America has actually changed over the past 40 to 60 years. Okay? If you go back to, for example, 1946, Athens, Tennessee, they were absolutely upfront about who was hacking the election and how they were doing it. It was blatant, it was in your face. And there was a shootout called the Battle of Athens, 1946, Tennessee, with 1,500 rounds fired over a screwball election.
But you had World War II vets that came back, and they go, hey, man, weren't we fighting for this? freedom
exactly.
And democracy?
What they said was, you know, we just finished taking down Hitler and Mussolini and Toto and all these other maniacs. Why do we have to deal with the same old maniacs here in, you know, back hills of Tennessee that we've been dealing with forever? We just don't need to do this. So there was actually a wave of reform, especially across the South after World War II. Hot Springs, Arkansas got cleaned up, for example. Stephen Hunter wrote one of his books on that particular subject, fictionalized, of course. But in real life, Hot Springs was Las Vegas before Las Vegas existed. But it was illegal, and it was a big corrupt mess. So those gangsters all got chased out of Hot Springs, Arkansas, and they ended up in Las Vegas.
Well, let's go ahead and talk about this. There was reform here in 2000, and a lot of people don't know, and we'll talk about this a little bit. In 2006, there was an opportunity. We had a very popular conservative Republican named Karen Johnson from the Mormon community. She's very conservative, Bill of Rights, Eagle Forum, Phyllis Schlafly supporting John Birch Society. She was the state chair for Pat Buchanan, you know, back in the 96 presidential election cycle here. And and she had witnessed a lot of election fraud. I mean, she knew that there were problems.
Right.
She and I have been friends for a long time, and she was willing to introduce legislation that would require manual validation of a small percentage of the ballots. Just randomly, you know, spin a roulette wheel, throw a dart, roll dice, whatever. And you come up with some precincts, and you go, okay, we're just going to randomly count these. And it's like 2% or something, and compare it with the election, what the computer said. Well, this we got involved. A lot of us, you know, kind of made sure that everybody got in the and it was all very difficult for them to not vote for it. Well, they passed it. And then Janet Napolitano signed it in. Absolutely, we're going to get to it. Well, during the 2006 election cycle, that's when this happened. I was running for Secretary of State against now Governor Jan Brewer. I knew that. I'm going, there is no way they're going to do this. I knew that. There's going to be something. Well, in there, Jan was to create a committee that was going to be made up of all these computer guys to determine, blah, 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 blah. And I knew she wasn't going to do it. I go down to the Secretary of State's office. I'm going, look, man, deadline is come and gone here. You got this committee you need to do. You got to get this, or you're not going to be able to make a deadline to be able to make for this election, which I knew was the point. And the Assistant Secretary of State, Kevin Tine, which has been behind a lot of this stuff, he goes, yeah, Ernie, we're not going to, and life sucks, and it sucks to be you, and in your face. I go, really? Okay. Well, that, him saying that was enough evidence. That was, I did an affidavit. That was evidence that they weren't going to comply with it. I filed a special action in the Arizona Supreme Court. Boom. Let's go to trial. Well, what happened was they're like, oh, we hate Ernie. So they went ahead and did it. They went through the process. But the Libertarian Party in Miracle County, we had to sue. We sued them after the election because what did they do? The whole point of this thing was to make sure that you had a chain of custody. It's all on videotape in a room in the Maricopa County elections. Well, what'd they do? They took them out from under the videotape. The ballots just disappeared. I mean, on videotape, they disappeared.
The mayor of Joe Pyle's place.
They took them to Joe R. Pyle's training facility.
At a meeting, and they were doing it wrong. They have seals which have the same numbers over and over again. They don't sign their poll tapes. They don't segregate out their vote by mail, their precinct, and they put it all one bundle. John McCain wins the vote by mail 2-1, and he loses at the precinct. These are impossible things.
But this is what happened. These zip ties, they have numbers on them. They're like seals. It starts to come out. They find out that you buy those in lots. It could have 10 of the seals. They're the same number. And all of this stuff, they're going to break. What they did is we highlighted all of this in trial. Even though they passed a manual validation law, it didn't matter.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Yeah! We're saved by nothing! That's right, saved by nothing here on Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, John Brakey, Jim March. And, you know, that's one of the other parts of this story is even after we did get what I have been screaming for since 94, it was manual validation. Imagine this. You go to an election. You have a Scantron, you know, whatever. It's a big piece of paper. You're filling out your number two pencil kind of thing, whatever. You go ahead and fill it out. You connect the arrows, something. It scans it in, and it collects the actual paper. Well, then it gives you, you know, the memory key. And so all these problems start when they start doing this electronic stuff. Well, that's cool. It's fine. How about we just have a little validation, a little manual validation? What the heck? Let's give it a shot. So we get something, and they want to do 10%, and they keep whittling it down. They get 2%.
And that 2% is real poorly, 2%. I mean, it's maybe only two or three races picked at random, and it does not count city or county at all. And, you know, a lot of times, especially your county races and city elections, you know, those are things to be watched.
Okay, well, my point is that we got the law passed, all right? So then it's like, now we need to randomly select what race is going to get selected. Okay, you know, it selects this race and that one and a little congressional here, a little legislative there, whatever. So they have this selection, and we go and we're going to do the counting. Well, then all of a sudden, all the ballots disappear. They leave the actual where they're supposed to do them in the elections department, and they wind up getting taken by Sheriff Joe Arpaio. I feel so much better. So they go off into some training facility. We don't know where they're at, and so on. Then they set it up. From then on, we're like, right. So the Libertarian Party, we file suit. We go through the process. We follow it. You know, from the beginning to the end, what happened here, what happened there. One of the expert testimony is Jim March. And tell us about the actual paper ballot bins that they put them in, and what were they doing with
them?
Well,
yeah, they were actually holding some of the ballots that were going to be hand-counted from the mail-in vote process were put in these plastic square buckets, bins, with folding lids on, that we found the same model of bin at Fry's Electronics for $13.95. Well, they had punched a couple of holes in these turkeys and had a place where you could apply a seal. Well, the first problem was they bought their seals in 20 packs and didn't tell anybody. So that's a problem. But second problem is
they had the same serial number. They had the same 20 seals with the same serial number.
Yes, and we found this only by accident later. That's a hilarious story in and of itself. But getting back on topic, these buckets, not only did they have a joke seal on them, but even if they had the best seals in the world, it wouldn't matter. If you take a center punch and a hammer, and you can punch out this metal pin and open these things from the sides instead of the middle,
It was the hinge.
Without leaving a trace.
Imagine some of you have seen these in offices. They have it's a double door that opens on the top of these bins, and then they mesh together right. when they close, and they put seals on them. But the hinge that goes in, all it is just, you know, plastic holes that intermesh with each other, and there's a steel rod. Like, you know, it's a little bit right. smaller than a clothes hanger. And that rod just goes in. All you do is just push out the rod, and you open the entire top. This was, it was like so stupid of them to even call this secure that we're demonstrating this in court. And what was the result of that trial?
And the result was that the judge said that he could not do anything to control the conduct of the election by this agency, and which is absolutely insane. Now, we're appealing a similar decision out of Pima County. Our judge says, you know, we can't do anything about this kind of insanity. We're appealing that, and we're trying to get a statement by the appellate court judges that, judges can make sure that an election is conducted constitutionally and sanely. So, you know, we're pushing that issue. But on the other hand, you know, this may go all the way to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court might end up saying, in worst-case scenario, yeah, election officials can do whatever they want with running the election, even if it violates actual statutes, actual laws on the handling of elections.
Well, that's what happened. That's exactly what happened. The law said blah, yeah. blah, blah. They didn't. I remember what the judge says. He goes, well, you know. So, and there were so many instances and so many pieces of evidence, and it just got, they're just like, you know, you guys just, you won't stop. You want like a really accurate, fair election. You just, and you're just not getting it. Didn't you get the memo? That's not our job. We don't do that.
That memo. We're going to go ahead and take this all the way. We have to.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'd say, Ernie, if I could let your listeners know to know more about this, if they Google Seeking Justice, Audit AZ, they'll find the appeal. And I think they're going to see one heck of a great argument by two attorneys that are handling this appeal. And we feel confident that we're going to win it. Maybe not in this low, maybe the next.
You know, and this is where we get, I'll tell you what happens. I've been dealing last few years with a lot of people that are, you know, it doesn't matter if it was accurate. You know, the entire generation of these agorists, these libertarian anarchist types, and, you know, freekeen.com and the New Hampshire Free Staters and all these young people that went through the Lovevolution the last few years, they got an up close and personal firsthand view of just how this system works. And they've just gone, you know, the immorality of even using a majority vote to tell other people what you're going to do with their property is they're past that. It's a whole nother realm. We have there was a video that we're putting together. There's a thing called Liberty on Tour. It's an RV that's going around the country. They did it last year. It was called Motorhome Diaries. And they're doing it again, and we're going to be sponsoring a lot of stuff and so on. And one of the things that they do as part of the service of sponsoring them is they're passing out a bunch of stuff. Well, what are we doing? We're going to be making a bunch of DVDs. So we have the DVDs, and what do we put on there? Well, you know, different speeches this and different things that, you know, little 10-minute stuff. They kind of, you know, promote this, you know, this transcendence above all of this, we're going to use this force of the ballot to take your stuff. And so there was one of the videos is from Larkin Rose. He writes on Freedom's Phoenix every now and then, and he's an author. He did a book called The Iron Web, and it's just basically, you know, we break with thee. Well, one thing that he does, he has a short video, YouTube, that he just, it goes to him, and he's writing on a piece of paper. And he writes on there, and he goes, well, you know, I'm writing myself the ability to, and he holds it up, and it says, I am allowed to steal your stuff, or I'm allowed to rob you. Oh, you don't like this one? Okay, well, and he writes another one, and it has a bunch of signatures on it and everything. Well, me and a bunch of my friends, you know, signed this document, says, I'm allowed to rob you. Oh, you don't like that? Okay, we'll make it really parchment-y, and we'll make it all nice and pretty. And the point that he was making is that, at the very least, he goes, I'm giving myself the ability to allow to rob you, a particular person. But even if we did this, you know, you had the Constitution, it was people that are dead saying that they're going to pass on the ability to rob your great-great-great-grandchildren, and there's nothing you can do about it. He's like, at what point does this become ludicrous? Oh, and by the way, to justify that, we're going to use, you know, corrupt election processes. I mean, it just, how bad does it have to get before you have, especially with the internet and so on, and the understanding of the immorality of just trying to justify robbing someone? Because the election that got you started was one about stealing enormous amounts of money from people because of a vote. And they won, but what if it was accurate? I mean, what if it was perfectly accurate? Would they still have the right to go rob from people? Well, this is the point that I think we're going into now. It's a whole nother level of understanding. It's gotten so bad that not only do they question the process by which they're robbing, it doesn't even matter if it was accurate. Should they give sanction to a process that steals from their neighbors? So I want to ask you guys that. Do you see that continuing?
Well, here's the thing. Only a small percentage of the votes are directly about, you know, redistribution of wealth. I mean, we vote on a lot of things beyond that one subject. So, you know, you're kind of taking this in a very libertarian direction. And, hey, as a libertarian, I'm right there with you. But setting that aside, though, we're still going to need honest elections, even in a genuinely libertarian society, if we ever happen to get there. So fixing the election process is going to be necessary, and it's absolutely going to require Democrats like John Brakey, the other guy on the line here, you know, who's, I don't think he's ready to go, you know, quite that far in terms of, well, political theory and economic theory and those kinds of things.
Well, they got to deal with John or they got to deal with me. They got to deal with John or they got to deal with me. They got to make it accurate or they got to deal with somebody who doesn't care. I mean, well, that's the choices that they have.
Somebody like getting a John Doherty in there. And you know John Doherty. He's running for the U.S. Senate. Investigative reporter, straight shooter, took down, you know.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, John Brakey, and Jim March. We are, you know, having a philosophical discussion. We, you know, after you go through these kinds of experiences, it has to change you. I mean, it has to have you come with, you know, some kind of a direction that you're taking. I mean, you have to do something. I came at this with an open mind from the beginning in 88. I started really, something was wrong with the world. It was like a splinter in my mind. And I went through and I'm going, whoa, I see what it is. It's election law. They were able to eliminate competition before it started. They were able to control the mechanism of government. Because I came at it from commerce, my father's company, I mean, all kinds of stuff. It had, but I'm like, how in the heck are they able to get away with this stuff? It was election law. They were able to control what any expression the people would have. And then you find out that voter participation plummets, you know, as it gets worse. And whenever they get some kind of a ray of hope, you know, it's the Perot thing or it's Ron Paul or Obama's going to give us change or whatever. It'll blip up and then it'll go back down again. But it's blipping up less and less each time. And after this Obama administration and more war and more, you know, Wall Street on the board and everything, you know, you're going, wow, why would anybody vote anymore? Especially after all of this. And I had Bev Harris from Black Box Voting on a couple weeks ago, and she's, you know, kind of the same thing. She's like, yeah, but we gotta, you know, each vote is an evidence, gives you standing, and it's evidence of, you know, somebody doing the right thing, and yeah, it's all screwed up, but, you know, what else are you gonna do? And I'm stop. I mean, you know, I'm quit supporting the beast that's devouring you. But I mean, if I had to ask if I, you know, could get any kind of acquiescence from Jim or John, let me ask John first. If it wasn't advocating for voting, what else would it be? I mean, I don't know. Are you creative enough to think of something else, or is this all that you want to focus on?
For me, it's the end of my years, and this is my focus. You know, life's been good to me. I want to give back. I want to make sure that my grandchildren had what I had. And I think it's to see them burdened with all this debt, it's just incredible. But I do believe that we're gonna eventually win. And I don't know. It could be my sons who will be finishing this, or my grandchildren. This is a battle that's been going on a long time. They just didn't have computers.
No, I'm pretty optimistic we'll win. I don't think, if you think voting is going to give you freedom, you haven't been paying attention.
No, I don't. But I do believe this, is that it should be transparent enough that we should be able to know who won or lost and then have that argument rather than wondering if it was counted right.
Well, that's another thing. Let me ask Jim. I mean, you know, you're talking about, hey, a lot of the votes are not necessarily for expenditures. It's just elect representatives that didn't rip me off. And I'm asking, what's the difference?
Well, I think there's a small difference, but on a larger sense, yeah, you're right, okay? But on the other hand, right now we don't have a truly libertarian society. We don't even have close libertarian society. And most people's heads don't seem to be ready to go there just yet. I think we'll get there, and I think an upcoming real depression, which is, you know, we haven't even seen the beginning of the financial problems we're facing. I think that's going to wake a lot of people up.
But, you know, we're in much more libertarian society than people realize. I mean, every decision you make, from the time that you get up to the time you go to bed, you're in a free market of ideas and choices and economic and social. And everything. I mean, live in a libertarian freaking deluge every moment of your life until you get this injection of this statism into some decision you got to make. And that's what messes everything up. They think, oh, no, we could never live. No, government's not that way. They don't represent how we're living all day, every day, anyway.
Look, Ernie, one of the things I studied in detail is, I don't know if you're aware of this, you probably are, most people aren't. There were actually two different civil rights movements in America to try to give minorities more civil rights. There were two different movements. They were almost 100 years apart.
Guns and voting.
the first one failed. The first one ran from about the end of the Civil War, call it 1865, to about 1876 when it died out. And that first movement was actually led by a guy named John Bingham, who was an Ohio Republican, and he was an anti-slavery guy before the war. But after the war, he was the top voice on racial equality, and he was the primary author of the 14th Amendment. That first civil rights movement may have flamed out and died, but before it did, it passed the 14th Amendment, which became the crowbar that the later group, led by, you know, Dr. King and that whole crowd, used to pry loose a whole bunch of reforms. So, you know, a political movement, a reform movement, can die out and fail.
This is, and that's a good point to bring up. And the reason I say guns and voting is because when the slaves were freed, all the gun control stuff came in. No, you have to get permission from the sheriff in order to be armed.
Yeah.
You don't want all these slaves out there with guns, because it doesn't matter if they vote then, because they got guns. So I'm going, you know, this is, and then of course, do we want to exercise, you know, the vote, and you had the women thing, and on and on and on. And my whole point is you kind of make my point by them creating the 14th Amendment. They didn't free the slaves as much as they enslaved everybody else in the states under the federal government. And I'm going, it's like the Second Amendment decision that came out down from the Supreme Court. I know, Jim, you probably watched that with a lot of interest. They said, no Chicago, nope, 14th Amendment, Second Amendment. It's kind of, you wanted to have the federal government in, have a decision on the Second Amendment. Well, we rule it's an individual right and you got to comply, and there we go.
Wait a second, Ernie. Okay. I'm actually a big fan of the 14th Amendment, okay? I believe that properly implemented the way John Bingham wanted it to work, okay? It was supposed to work like this. If the federal government trampled on people's civil rights, the states collectively could get together enough muscle to put the federal government under some semblance of control. However, if any one state or a small group of states decided to go violate people's civil rights, then the federal government could stomp on them.
But they don't. And when they say the Second Amendment is an individual, you wanted all you 10th Amendment and 9th Amendment people out there, all you 10th Amendment, the sovereignty of the state, blah, 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 blah. And the Bill of Rights says what? It says Congress shall make no law. Doesn't say anything about anybody else. Congress, the federal government, shall not do this stuff. Well, they go, all right, well, we got the 14th Amendment that says Congress can if they want to. All right. So you go, all right. So we have the states and they say, we have this gun restriction. Federal government comes in and says, nope, you can't do that. Second Amendment, we trump states and we're in charge now. And what I'll guarantee you what's coming right down the rail on this is that, hey, man, you didn't complain when the federal government said you had Second Amendment rights. Well, now the federal government says fill in the blank, we get to do whatever. You just gave them jurisdiction over state law. And I'm going, okay, so what do we have today, right now? We have the SB 1070 immigration bill that's going on and on and on. There was a ruling today. Here came the ruling. In a ruling today, the federal judge struck down everything that occurs at the time and after a police stop, but left everything in before the police stop, including the sending of law-abiding Arizonans' driver's license information to the feds, which includes anybody that requested a concealed carry permit, hunting license, fishing license, all this information, the national ID part of it. That's fine. But that's what they always wanted from the beginning. This whole thing of this government that's there to protect my individual rights is BS. It is not there. They will take and do everything they can to get what they really wanted. And what they wanted was transfer of ID from the state of Arizona to create this national list that they could check your immigration on. They struck down everything else except the national ID part. And I'm going, gee, I'm so freaking shocked. Today.
Right.
So I'm going, so everything that you're saying, it's like, well, the federal government can come in and what? Screw me. They're not going to protect individual rights. They're not going to do that. This whole thing was all about getting the national data. So, I'm just so done with it. I'm just done. I understand your point, but I tell you who's winning. I am. Why? Because the vast, vast majority of Americans that can vote are not. Why?
I can understand that.
Why? I mean, they think that there's some benefit in it. They feel better. It's like their football team or something. I'm just wondering. I'm glad you guys are doing what you're doing. You need to keep doing it, but it just feeds into everything. That's why I promote from us knowing the truth and having you come on. And it's just, but I tell you, the main thing that I'm getting out of this is just more support of what I've been screaming for the past few years. I'm going, when do we get off of this treadmill? There's got to be something else.
Can we plug our site if people want to know?
Can you stay into the next hour?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, just hold on, and you can plug it all you want in the next segment here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. Because these guys need help. They need a lot of people. There's a lot of work that's involved in doing this stuff. It's amazing what they've been able to accomplish. And that's one thing. Maybe we'll spend some time in the next hour talking about who was supporting them. And then who pulled the support? The Democratic Party, man, they were all over this when they thought it benefited them. Then what? Oh, that's a whole story in and of itself. I as much as they see evidence of what's going wrong and what needs to be done to bring legitimacy back to the system, I understand. But I'm telling you, I have, even if it was accurate, I don't give legitimacy to the system anymore. because of stuff like this.